May it please the court, I represent Sandra Hackworth and her claim against Walmart Stores. This matter originated before the Industrial Accident Board, involving a number of issues. What has survived to this level of appeal is the question of payment of certain medical expenses. Specifically, there are two groups of medical expenses at issue. One is the bills for a Dr. Amir, a pain management physician, who provided treatment to Ms. Hackworth, and the other is a set of bills from a company called RS Medical that provided medical equipment and supplies in connection with Dr. Amir's treatment. Both Dr. Amir and RS Medical were impleaded as third parties to this workers' compensation action, which is a provision of 19 Delaware Code Section 2346 concerning essentially that statute entitles any interested party to bring a dispute over medical bills to the board for resolution.
Why aren't they parties here?
Why are they not parties here?
Why are they not parties here? How can we adjudicate their interests without their being present?
In the first instance, RS Medical did not appear before the Industrial Accident Board, so they appear to have waived that. I think in the second instance, with regard to Dr. Amir.
Did RS Medical lose before the IAB?
Part of the reason we're here is that the IAB didn't take any position with respect to the claimant's responsibility to RS Medical, which is what we wanted before the board. So,
but the board did hold that the RS Medical expense was not compensable. Isn't that correct?
It did.
That is, it wasn't accident or work-related?
Well, I don't know that they decided that necessarily, and I think that's the first part of the problem with the RS Medical bill.
Well, tell me what they did decide as to RS Medical.
They denied the bill. I think that much is not in dispute. The question is why they denied it. Under 2346, the amendment in 1997 essentially changed that statute to allow impleading of a third party.
But before you get into a discussion about the law, we are told, and I don't know that there's any dispute, that no evidence was presented to justify the RS Medical bill as either being necessary or reasonable or, you know, whatever the other term is. Is that correct? There was just a failure of proof in that regard.
I don't believe that's true. I do understand that the board made that conclusory ruling that these bills are not reasonable, necessary, and related. And they did that sort of in one chunk as opposed to making three separate findings.
I know, but the fact is there was no evidence to show any of those three. Isn't that correct?
Well, I respectfully disagree with that for a couple of reasons, the first of which is that the claimant's obligation to establish the board has to determine whether a particular medical expense is reasonable in amount.
I wish you would just focus on my question.
Okay, I'm sorry. The claimant's burden is to show that bills were incurred in connection with the work injury and not paid.
The claimant showed that this bill was incurred after the work injury and that it wasn't paid, but it was a muscle stimulator. And there was no evidence, at least as I understand the record, to show that that anybody had prescribed this muscle, whatever it was, in order to treat the work-related injury. Is that right?
I don't believe that's correct. I believe the claimant submitted this packet of bills and testified that these are the bills that are incurred and outstanding in connection with my work injury. Dr. Amir testified that his treatment
Let's focus on RS Medical.
Sure.
Focus just on that. What was the evidence?
The RS Medical bills were a part of the packet of bills that were submitted to the Industrial Accident Board, handed up by the claimant in connection with testimony from the claimant that these are the bills incurred in connection with my work injury that are unpaid. Dr. Amir testified that his treatment was reasonable, necessary, and related to the work injury. Under Bailey versus Kraft Foods, which is a board decision cited to the board at that hearing, that's enough.
Let me stop you right there, because I'm reading from the board's decision where it says claimant seeks reimbursement for a $3,525 bill from RS Medical for some medical equipment. So far, so good in terms of that's accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay. Claimant bears the initial burden of showing the medical expenses were reasonable, necessary, and related to the work injury. Agreed or not?
I believe that that's what the board has to find in order to award those. The burden of proof under Dunkel and Johnson versus Townsend shifts somewhat.
So you're saying that the claimant does not have to show that this is reasonable and medically necessary?
Under Dunkel and Johnson versus Townsend, the claimant has to show that she's incurred medical expenses, that the expenses are attributable to the work-related injury, and the employer has not paid those expenses.
Ultimately, so who has to show that they were reasonable?
The employer, once that burden is met, the employer has to come forth with evidence that the bills are unreasonable.
Okay, well, then let's move on here, because the board then says, claimant presented no testimony about the need for or use of the equipment from RS Medical. Is that accurate or not?
I don't believe that it is. She testified that those bills were part of her treatment. Dr. Amir testified that his treatment was reasonable and necessary and related. Under the Bailey case, which
now, wait a second. I don't care about the cases right now. I care about the evidence.
Sure.
Okay? And the board says that the claimant presented no testimony about the need for or use of the equipment from RS Medical. And you're saying that's inaccurate as a matter of fact.
I believe that's true.
And what facts do you have that dispute what this statement says?
The facts are that the claimant submitted bills, including the RS Medical bill, with testimony that these
from
are
the claimant.
From the claimant, that these bills were incurred in connection with my work injury and they remain unpaid.
Okay.
Dr. Amir testified.
Dr. Amir didn't testify about this medical equipment, did he?
He testified about his treatment generally.
Did he testify about this medical equipment?
He did not, but that is not required.
I just want to get some facts here.
Sure.
You're making conclusions that I don't necessarily agree with, but it's important to get the facts straight, okay?
I understand.
So nobody testified that she needed to have this medical equipment, right? Other than your client.
My client testified to it. The other thing I will say is that it is evident from...
Wait. No, let's go stepwise here,
sure.
Okay? The next statement from the board is, the only testimony about the device came from Dr. Grossinger, who opined that the equipment was not reasonable, necessary, or related to the work accident. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
So the board made a conclusion based upon this evidence that the claimant failed to meet her burden of proving that the medical expenses were reasonable, necessary, and related to the work accident. What's wrong with that conclusion?
I think the problem is that the claimant did submit evidence. Now, I guess the important...
No, wait a second. The evidence that was submitted was a bill, right?
Several, yes.
Okay. And the fact that there's a bill doesn't necessarily mean that it is necessary, reasonable, or appropriate to be paid, right?
True. The bill itself doesn't establish that.
Okay.
Dr. Amir's testimony did.
Dr. Amir didn't testify about this particular medical equipment at all, correct?
He did not testify about this specific medical treatment. He testified about his treatment generally. True.
Which did not include this particular RS medical equipment, correct?
I don't think that's accurate.
Well, not specifically.
He did not specifically address the RS medical bill.
A box of bills. Plus testimony from Dr. Amir that here's a box of my bills. They're all reasonable, they were all necessary, and they were all related. I mean,
correct.
Isn't that what we're talking about?
Yes,
versus
is.
Specific testimony about the RS medical equipment.
That's true.
Okay.
So wasn't it within the board's province to say, based upon a general statement that this box of bills represents appropriate medical treatment versus a doctor who specifically said this was inappropriate or not medically necessary, that the board could conclude that it was not medically necessary?
My answer is in two parts, because ultimately this comes down to a dispute between doctors, Dr. Amir on the one hand that says it's reasonable and Dr. Grossinger on the other who says it's not, and the board is free to pick between the two. That's not my issue.
Okay.
My issue is that the Industrial Accident Board has issued specific rulings, including the Bailey versus Kraft case, that say that the doctor doesn't need to testify about each specific bill. And so if that's the board's policy, that they will accept bills and general testimony that the treatment is reasonable, necessary, and related, you can't say that that's a failure of proof on the claimant's part when the claimant has complied with that rule of law that the board has handed down in other cases. Do you follow me there? They've said that's enough evidence. It doesn't necessarily carry the day, but it's not a failure of proof.
Well, that's like saying you've made a prima facie case.
Correct.
But then after, so let's assume that you made a prima facie case. Then when we had this specific testimony from another doctor about this specific bill, the board concluded, notwithstanding your prima facie case, it wasn't going to allow this bill. And Justice Berger's question is, why isn't that something that would be sustained on appeal?
I think that should be sustained on appeal. Don't misunderstand me. But I think it's not for the reason that the claimant didn't meet her burden of proof. It's that the board decided the ultimate factual question in the employer's favor, which is fine. The problem that we have is that the board didn't go the extra step that's enabled by those amendments to 2346 that says that the board can then protect the claimant from unreasonable charges and unnecessary charges of a third-party medical provider if they're impleaded. It's not that we want the bill awarded so much.
We don't want the
claimant to have to pay it when the board's decided it's not reasonable.
But you're asking us to limit the rights of Dr. Mironoris Medical, aren't you?
Not at this stage. I'm asking for a determination by the board that they failed to make. I think ultimately the problem with the board's decision is that they didn't address this at all.
What dog does Walmart have in this fight right now as whether or not Dr. Mears' bills or RS Medical's bills ought to be paid, even though they're not for a compensable injury?
I believe that Walmart has a dog in this fight to the extent that and this is an issue we haven't gotten to yet. The board has said, in a general matter, some of Dr. Amir's treatment is compensable and some of it is not, and we decline. We leave to you to figure out which that is. Clearly, Walmart has a dog in that fight in the sense that they want to pay for,
that's
presumably.
That's your second argument. I'm trying to figure out what Walmart's dog is in the first part of the argument that you bring to us.
I don't know that they do.
But then how are we supposed to adjudicate that when there's nobody on the other side?
I think that without a ruling by the board, it needs to go back to them for a decision so that...
Well, as I understand it, you want a remand to the board, at which time RS Medical could participate.
But I'm not sure about that. Having failed to appear the first time, I don't know if they get a second crack at it. But
then everything I'm going to say you should deem to be a hypothetical.
Okay.
And we've talked about the fact that bills have to be reasonable, necessary, and related. Hypothetically, if the board said unequivocally, this RS Medical bill is completely unrelated to the work injury, stop there. Could they in any way extinguish RS Medical's rights to collect?
Under 2346, that statute enables any interested party to come to the board for a dispute like that. That includes RS Medical. They could come on their own behalf. In fact, General Motors versus English is a case in which exactly that happened.
All right, and just focus on my hypotheticals, and then I think I understand where you want the law to go, but it's going to help me if I understand the answer to my hypothetical. And that is, are you saying even if the board concluded that the medical bill was unrelated to the work injury, they could nevertheless make a determination that the bill either should or should not be paid?
I don't know that if the board were to say it's completely unrelated, having, you know, the injury was to the back and this treatment is for the arm, and so we declined to adjudicate the claimant versus
the provider. Well, that's why my threshold hypothetical, I think, is important to where you want to develop the law. Because it seems to me you only get to necessary and reasonable if you first get over the threshold requirement that it be related to the work injury. But if it's not related to the work injury, I don't see how you can adjudicate third-party rights.
I understand the court's position on that. I do also note that even in the Superior Court, where we were not successful, the Superior Court judge noted that this RS Medical treatment in particular was prescribed in the context of the work injury. I don't know how that isn't an implicit recognition of a causal connection here. And it seems to me that the problem is the board has historically treated
Well, Mr. Scrivener, before you go on, because I'm also interested in the answer to Justice Holland's question, and I'm not sure we've gotten it. In order, and we're focusing just on RS Medical at this point, okay. Not the other issue. In order for this argument to go anywhere, the answer to Justice Holland's question, which is, would it make any difference? That is, would it have any binding effect on RS Medical's rights, would have to be yes. That is, if you can't answer that question unequivocally yes and give us reasons, then this argument doesn't go anywhere because we couldn't grant the relief you're asking for, even if you were right in the abstract.
I'm not sure I follow you. In the sense that...
That is, if unless you can say that it would make a difference legally in terms of... you know, your clients being bound or not bound, that is, liable or not liable to pay RS Medical's bills, then we have no reason to consider this argument because it wouldn't get you the relief you want no matter which way we ruled.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that because I think it's explicit in the Superior Court's decision even, that the RS Medical charges were incurred in the context of the work
injury. Tell us why the Superior Court, tell us what the pathway is legally to get us from from your argument to the conclusion that this would somehow protect Ms. Hackworth from the claim by RS Medical. And don't tell us that the Superior Court implicitly decided it, because the next question would be, why is the Superior Court right?
I think the problem with the board's decision is they treat this concept of reasonable, necessary, and related as a single entity. It's not three different elements of proof.
I know you said that.
And the problem is, I think it's apparent from the Superior Court's decision and as well from the evidence that this RS Medical treatment was in the context of the work injury. Assuming that to be true, we get on to the question of whether it's reasonable in amount and necessary to treat the patient, whether it's appropriate.
Well, let's cut through this. Let's suppose, hypothetically, that the board held first that there was no evidence that the RS Medical bill was related. Secondly, even if it was related, there's no sufficient evidence that it was necessary or reasonable. Let's assume that was the ruling. How does that get you to where you want to go?
You're suggesting that they made all three findings?
Yes.
I don't think that does. I think the problem is that
What more could they do?
I'm sorry?
What more could they do? They would be giving you the particularity that you're asking for.
They could find that it's related in the context of having been rendered in the context of a work injury, but that, for example, the charges are excessive. They could find that it's related, but alternatively that it was unnecessary. The claimant didn't need it. In either case, the claimant would be looking at protection under this 2346 language.
How?
In that context, the Industrial Accident Board has the authority. No party to the proceeding shall have any liability for payment of charges in excess of the amount deemed reasonable and necessary. If the board says none of it's reasonable, it shouldn't have happened, or it's not necessary, you were overcharged, then the claimant enjoys some protection there.
Well, help me understand your argument, because maybe I misunderstood what you were doing in your brief. I got the impression in your brief that you were saying this is all hypothetical. If I'm injured on the job and I go see Dr. Smith, that bill's work-related, we'd have all the normal hearing before the board. But then after my injury on the job, if I'm playing softball in a totally recreational, unwork-related, unemployer-related event, and I'm hurt, and I go see Dr. Jones, I got the impression you were trying to suggest you could join Dr. Jones in your Industrial Accident Board case and get the board to make a determination that I don't owe Dr. Jones any money.
I wasn't, unless I add to the hypothetical, that's not what I was suggesting.
All right.
I don't know if you want me to add to the hypothetical or not.
Well, yeah, just because you seem to be saying that when you're injured and you get successive treatments, somehow you can bring in all of the health care providers before the Industrial Accident Board and have the Industrial Accident Board say, these were work-related, here's what your employer needs to pay. These were not work-related, or for whatever reason, you don't have to pay them. Is it your argument that the board has jurisdiction to do that?
I think that any medical provider can raise this issue. Any claimant can raise this issue of should these be, are these bills related? Will you order the comp carrier to pay them? I think that there is an issue with respect to Dr. Jones, for example, who's treating a completely unrelated
right,
condition.
But you seem to be suggesting that the board can say not only doesn't the comp carrier have to pay them, but you, the claimant, don't have to pay them either.
Not as to Dr. Jones. I'm not suggesting that. That's
okay. All right. Well, we're into your rebuttal time. Do you want to save it, or do you want to continue with some additional points?
Unless the court has any specific questions, I will retain that time.
I just had one, and it goes to the other issue.
Sure.
That is the problem that the board didn't determine how much of the doctor's bill was related to treatment of the knees and treatment of the neck. Is it correct that the first time that the parties were aware that that was an issue, that that distinction became an issue, was at the time that the board rendered its opinion?
I don't believe there was anything in the hearing proper that suggested
the answer is yes.
That. Yes.
Okay. At that point, did you, representing the claimant, attempt to meet with the other side and try to allocate the bill? Or bills?
I can't specifically answer that question. There's another attorney in my office who handled the underlying claim, and frankly, another attorney on behalf of employer that handled the underlying claim as well.
So it would be equally fair to say that you don't know, well, I guess the record would show that nobody went to the board and asked them to adjudicate that issue at the board level before going to the Superior Court?
There was not a re-argument filed, no. We think our medical bill exhibit contains ample information to sort this out. At this point, there has been no sorting out by the board or by the employer or its counsel.
Let me follow up on that. The board, if I'm not mistaken, said, okay, a portion of this bill will be compensable, but only that portion that was related to, the back and not the knees, whatever, okay? And then said, I'll leave it to the parties to work out how to allocate that. I mean, in essence, that's what the board said?
That's the heart
okay.
of it.
And you're telling me now that you don't know that the parties ever tried to do that, number one. But if they did try to do that, apparently they were unsuccessful. And number three, after being unsuccessful, nobody went back to the board and said, well, yeah, I know you suggested that we work this out, but we can't work it out because we have differences of views as to what portion of this bill should be attributed to knee work and what portion of the bill should be attributed to back work. So we want to come back to the board and ask the board to make that determination. No, nobody did anything
we
like
didn't,
that.
We didn't do that. The board's essentially suggesting two hearings and two sets of medical evidence to justify a set of bills like this, which doesn't strike me as consistent with the West versus Walmart case that says, you know, the board has a duty to review these things.
Did you or your client ever take a position on the amount of money that should be awarded?
Our medical bill exhibit contains a summary information to that effect. Yes, sir.
Well, what is, in terms of allocating it?
We did not allocate, no.
Well, so that's never been done by either side?
I can't say that it has.
How would the board do it then if nobody else has?
It is the exhibit that was submitted contains not only the billing but also the corresponding medical records because we're required to communicate those to the other side. It is evident from the bills and records what was done at any given visit. So it is something the board had within its power to do.
The board is supposed to do this all by itself without any help from counsel? Yes or no?
That's what West says, yes.
And that's what you're asking us, in effect, to uphold?
Yes.
You've got about 50 seconds left.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good afternoon. Dennis Menton on behalf of Walmart.
Before you get into everything, yes, could we clear up what's apparently not clear right now as to what the parties did after the board said, please, you know, get together and divide up what's knee injuries and what's back injuries? What happened?
Your Honor, I am filling in for a colleague of mine for this oral presentation to you. My colleague, unfortunately, is on vacation, and when I prepared for oral argument, that was a question I had. I wasn't able to discern it from the file. It doesn't appear to me that the parties communicated with themselves to clear up the apportionment issue of the bill. If I may, Your Honor,
So there's apparently no efforts of settlement of that issue anywhere along the line, even until up to today.
To my knowledge, that is correct, Your Honor, as best I can detect from the file. But if I may, I'd like to comment on that particular issue. I was going to go through the briefing chronologically, but I'll begin there, if I may. When the board received the bills, they received the bills through the testimony of the claimant. The bills were packaged. Are these your bills? Yes, they're my bills. The board, and its exhibit, it's part of the exhibit of the opening brief, the board, when it got to attempting to apportion, attempted to do that in their footnote, I believe. That's a fair reading of what they attempted to do, and said, no, we can't do it. We can't figure it out. And, Your Honor, respectfully, I did that over the past couple of days, and I will respectfully represent to you that there is a process by which you determine whether a bill is related or not related. It's called bill processing. And we have a new statute in place now that will rectify this situation, because providers are going to be required to present their bills on a form, and there's three critical pieces of information necessary: date of service, diagnosis, and procedure. And what Dr. Amir did respectfully is fail in his billing to provide the diagnosis associated with the procedure itself.
You mean he didn't format the bills in that way?
Correct, Your Honor. And what one has to do to analyze this billing is to know and have an understanding of what's called CPT coding. CPT coding tells you, there's a book, and it's published nationally, and it tells you the procedure that is utilized at the time.
Based on your analysis over the last 2 days, you must have a number in mind that you would offer to pay.
I don't have it calculated, Your Honor. I didn't add it up. What I do have is a CPT code which appears to reflect the injections to the trapezius, but the coding is incorrect. The coding by Dr. Amir was to a tendon. Right. I would have to get up with my colleague and then in turn get up with Walmart to tell them that this bill is not coded properly, but it appears that the trapezius is itemized this way, and I can look at that and find and locate that.
One would expect in the run-of-the-mill case, the claimant would have totaled up whatever the claimant thought the claimant was entitled to. So they would go first with a number. Then you would respond to the number. Is that the traditional way?
I agree wholeheartedly, Your Honor, that if you have an understanding of billing processing, you can go through the bills, connect the coding with, even if the diagnosis is absent, you have to extrapolate to the record to match the itemized billing to what's going on that day, the date of service. And that is really the problem here, is that the Industrial Accident Board attempted to do this but was unable to extrapolate from the record matching the bill with an incorrect and inefficient or deficient billing.
Well, Mr. Smittinger seemed to suggest that's what the prior case law authorizes, that you just give a stack of bills to the board and let them figure it out, and you don't have to give them the amount you're looking for. Is that your understanding of the law?
Well, I understand that that's one of the decisions from the Superior Court level, Your Honor, that that this came up actually, I think, a month before this case went to hearing in the West case, West versus Walmart, where the same kind of practice occurred, dropping a package of medical bills.
Were you in that case, or was it your colleague or someone totally
It was different? Someone completely different, Your Honor.
Different law firm?
Yes. Yes, and
you say one of the decisions. Are there others on that?
You know, Your Honor, I think that's that is the only decision that I'm aware of that pushed that case back to the board and said, you try to figure this out, because that was a little different. The board at that time said, we're not going to do it. You know, they just washed their hands of the billing at that point and said, we're not going through those bills to try to figure it out. And the court said, well, you can't do that. You have to at least make an attempt. Now, it's distinguishable from where we are in that the board did make the attempt but couldn't do it.
All right. Well, you told us, Mr. Minton, A, that there is now a proper way to format this information.
Yes.
So that there can be a proper allocation. B, that that wasn't done in this case. And I'm asking, what's the C that follows from that?
The next step is for, actually, Your Honor, I will speak to my colleague who's managing this file.
What is the next step for us? What follows from that?
For the next step for you, Your Honor, is to uphold this decision because on that particular issue, because the board did attempt to do this, and it really falls in the category, respectfully, as a insufficiency of proof in the employer's position. We rely upon Guy Johnson Transport versus Donkel. It's a Supreme Court decision.
Where in the record is it shown that the board did attempt to do an allocation but couldn't?
That would be footnote 2, Your Honor, of the Industrial Accident Board proceeding, page 35.
Page 30?
35 of the Industrial Accident Board order, dated 11-2206. That first sentence says, the board cannot determine from the bill presented how much of Dr. Amir's bill can be attributed to treatment for the neck, and then goes on to say, assumes the parties can figure this out.
Isn't it a better reading of that footnote that the board didn't decide the issue?
Well, Your Honor, I do believe that's correct. The board did not decide the issue.
Then
but
why isn't remanding it the right remedy?
In respectfully, from the Walmart's position, remanding it is not the right remedy. Because I think the parties, first of all, can work this out, but secondly,
it's been 18 months since the board asked you, and the best evidence we have is that nobody's even bothered to talk. Now, your side only bears half the blame for that, as far as I can ascertain.
Right.
But I'm just amazed that the board would ask responsible counsel to do something, and apparently everybody just ignored the board's instruction. Am I missing something?
Your Honor, I'm here to tell you that this is a case that was transferred into our office. And after a point in time when the case grows with a certain age, it's difficult to pick up pieces from that, from another attorney coming in and reconstructing that. And what the attorney, and I'm trying to justify the attorney's action, sees an appeal and is really focused on the appeal and so much as the practicality of it. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
From our perspective, Mr. Minton, you're in the case now.
Yes.
You read all the opinions.
Yes.
And it would appear that you and Mr. Smittinger would have, at some time during the briefing of this case, expected this court to ask you, what have you done with respect to what the board said?
Absolutely.
This is not a... We're very happy to decide the legal issues and render opinions on the law and listen to all of the appeals that the attorneys want to bring to us. This is just not a good use of judicial resources.
And Your Honor, I'm not here to say otherwise. I prepared for oral argument over the past 2.5 days. I saw this issue. I saw this issue coming up before you. And then I went to go to the bills to try to figure out myself what would be payable per the board order. And I think I was able to do that. But respectfully, I had to extrapolate and use my knowledge that I've gained in this particular area of practice to figure this out.
So are you saying that you need more time to do what the board assumed the parties would be able to do?
Well, Your Honor, if I may, I approached Mr. Schmittinger before oral argument today because part of the billing that he presented in the opening brief is associated with RS Medical only. And Walmart, it takes the position that RS Medical simply is not payable at all. So the only issue then is the apportionment of trigger point injections of the trapezius of Dr. Amir and potentially some portion of his consults because he did oversee neck complaints in the trapezius right below the neck. So I foresee that occurring very quickly, as a matter of fact, if I can get up with my colleague and tell him what I've been able to glean from these records and the medical and the and what I see, that even though it's incorrect processing by Dr. Amir, respectfully, I can see from that a potential resolution.
So this is some appellate courts have mediation. This is a case that could be mediated?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Can I ask Mr. Smittinger if that's his view?
Your Honor, I think if I may address the court from here, we've articulated some positions on this for some time, including a briefing in the Superior Court. So far as I know, there have been no payments, even no expression of any undisputed payments being made on any of these bills, including Dr. Amir's. As the court rightfully points out, this has been around for quite a while. The bills were in the employer's hands long before the matter even came to the Industrial Accident Board. I would not turn down the opportunity to mediate. The problem hasn't gone away in time. I'm not sure how hopeful I am for that.
Your Honor, it's a matter of literally coming to terms of an inadequate billing process, an inadequate and insufficient proof before the board. And now that we have a compensable ruling on that issue of neck, which is final and binding, it's just a matter of interpreting and extrapolating the bill and to come to the correct apportionment amount.
Well, let's go into the first legal argument.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, that I broke down into two sections. First, the component of Dr. Amir's billing, the issue presented is whether the board erred by not ruling that the claimant is not responsible for Dr. Amir's treatment to her knees.
Can you help me with my question as to why Walmart cares whether the claimant is obligated to Dr. Amir?
I think your question, Your Honor, bears the answer, and that is where the parties were not properly noticed into your courtroom under rules, Supreme Court Rule 7. And they're not here. What impact does that mean? That means there's no appeal against those parties. That judgment then should be considered final and binding.
So why does Walmart care?
Walmart cares because, in a sense, if you were to remand this back, Your Honor, we have to defend that issue. The analytical framework begins with a predicate, and the predicate is that the IAB found that the knee problem was not cause-related. No appeal was taken from this particular finding. This ruling is thus final and binding, and respectfully, the Walmart takes the position that this predicate is dispositive of the issue, and that the Superior Court, Judge Witham, on 10907, did absolutely analyze this properly in that it found that when the board found no cause relationship to the knees, it divested itself of jurisdiction on the non-cause relationship finding. The claimant automatically got out of the Workers' Compensation Act. And the question then becomes, does what the claimant wants this court to do have the IAB have jurisdiction to adjudicate rights and responsibilities between Dr. Amir and the claimant over what will essentially be a contractual problem. Under contract law, cause relationship is really not an issue. If somebody goes and seeks treatment and care is provided and expenses are incurred, that's a contractual issue. And in fact, the board absolutely from Walmart's position, has the board has no jurisdiction to adjudicate this contract issue.
So let me stop you there, if I could, to try and resurrect Justice Holland's hypothetical with opposing counsel. What we have here with respect to Dr. Amir is we could hypothesize that Dr. Amir took care of the claimant's neck injuries, which were compensable.
Yes.
And something else happened that injured the plaintiff's knees. And it just so happens Dr. Amir took care of those things too, but those were not work-related and or in related to a work-related injury. And therefore, this would be the equivalent of having been injured out on the softball field and seeking treatment for that. It would be something that the IAB would have nothing to do with, and the statute would have no impact on.
That's right, Your Honor. And we rely upon 19 Delco 2301, as Judge Witham did, and also 29 Delco 8511, which gives the Industrial Accident Board and Department of Labor its authority with the Industrial Accident Board in order to get inside the act to create the jurisdiction of the board. It's really employee-employer relationship-oriented and injury-related to work-oriented. If you don't have any of that, then you're not in the act. And so it's case dispositive, respectfully. The same is true for the RS medical as well. The predicate of the board finding that it was not reasonable, necessary, and cause related, a finding, by the way, which is not on appeal. It's a given.
What exactly is the finding?
The finding is that per the board, and I think the board or the court read it earlier, was that specifically RS medical was not reasonable, necessary, cause related, sort of the boilerplate standard of compensability of medical. So on three fronts, they made this finding. But the critical front was the non-cause relationship finding due to insufficiency of proof. Once again, once you make that finding, the board is lacks jurisdiction. And so the claimant's request for this court to adjudicate and have this case go back to the board to adjudicate that issue is not proper pursuant to the statute, because the board does not have jurisdiction over that issue. I know, members, Your Honors, that on page 17 of the opening brief, there was some argument about whether or not exactly what the board held as far as RS Medical is concerned, and that's really a substantial evidence argument. Is there substantial evidence to support that finding? And Walmart respectfully submits that there is no evidence to make the link between the medical provided by RS and any physician who prescribed that. And I don't have the case site, Your Honors, because I didn't realize this was going to be an issue, but our precedent is that in order for the board to make a finding of cause relationship, it is necessary to have medical expert testimony to link that. That's a requirement, unless you go there with a fractured leg and everyone knows that's an injury. That's obvious. But for the most part, you need a doctor to say what the injury is, its cause relationship, and I treated it using these modalities that are linked to this injury and work-related injury. I think that's dispositive of the first argument, Your Honor. As far as the second argument, I respectfully submit that I know a lot of dialogue occurred over, why not get this straightened out? And I believe that we can. But in the end, though, the Industrial Accident Board is not charged with the responsibility of going through bills, extrapolating through bills to figure out what's payable, what's not payable. That under Guy Johnson Transport versus Dunkel, the burden is on the claimant for elements of proof, the second of which is that expenses are attributable to the work-related injury. That the cases that are cited in the brief to suggest that once a prima facie case is made, burden shifts to the employer. That's the General Motors versus English case. There's a Superior Court level decisions, and that this court has consistently ruled that if you bring the petition, you carry the burden. And
now, what Mr. Smittinger is saying is if the claimant has a stack of bills and testifies these are the bills that I incurred as a result of my work-related injury. That testimony under oath, supported by the stack of bills, so to speak, makes the case. And then the burden shifts to the employer to go through the bills one at a time and say either they're not work-related or they're unreasonable.
I respectfully disagree with that position, Your Honor, that what you have to do, and this is what the Industrial Accident Board is relying upon, is that inside those bills are reflective of treatment, and it's just a payment system is what it is, that you have to link the bills to the treatment to the work injury. And that's what the Industrial Accident Board is looking for the parties to do. And you have to do that through your medical testimony. The case was filed on the issue of permanency and medical bills. And curiously, Dr. Amir's bill was presented, but yet I wasn't able to ascertain one question on the specifics of the bill. He was never asked, here's your bill, Dr. Amir. Tell us what treatment is related to your billing. Tell us what your entries mean. Tell us that it's related. He was never asked the specifics of his bill. It was placed in a generic, generalized fashion. Doctor, is all your treatment reasonable, necessary, and related?
In the typical case now, are these bills being submitted with a stipulation that the parties agree that these bills were incurred as a result of the work-related injury or not? Or is it, are there doctors in every single case testifying on the minutia of all these bills? What's going on?
Your Honor, I can tell you that if there is a bill in one of my cases that I try to identify that bill as an issue, I ask the doctor if I have any questions about the line item entries that he has in terms of treatment and what he's asking to be reimbursed for, I'll ask him.
Yeah, but the council confer in advance about the bills and agree on what they disagree about.
Yes, and that's typically the case, Your Honor. If there is a medical expense issue with the petition, I ask that they be presented. Actually, there's a board rule that they have to be presented within 30 days of the hearing. I actually ask that they be presented far in advance of that so we know what we're dealing with. Absolutely.
So there are processes and rules in place to basically streamline this process so that there's just not going to be reams and reams of minutiae that the board's going to have to figure out.
That's right, Your Honor, and I agree with that. That's correct. At times, when there are multiple issues, and this was multiple body part case, neck, shoulders, knees, lumbar, you get so focused on the forest that you're not really paying attention to some of the trees that are inside the forest.
So that process was not applied in this case?
I agree. Yes. The answer is yes. In my view, it was not. The specifics of that billing processing was not applied in this case.
And I take it to follow up on that, that in addition to what you've described as a better form that's going to be used from now on for identifying treatments and what they were and all that, that even beyond that, it wouldn't necessarily be required that a doctor take the stand and say, okay, I'll look at this bill, I'll look at this bill. There could be an office manager or somebody else who does the bookkeeping who either on the stand or in advance could identify what the codes were and what the treatment was and what the charge was, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's a new, our statute was just reformed and it went into effect May 23 of this year. And in particular, Section 2322BJI tells you exactly that you have to use a form. It tells you you have to use service date, diagnosis related to the treatment and the particular procedure. And, Your Honor, the first step in any dispute in the new statute is for utilization review. So if a carrier denies the bill, they have to have an explanation, and then if there's a issue, it doesn't go to the board. That's the first step now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Time is short, so I'll be brief. There are rules to streamline this. The rules are what the board has implemented in the sense of obtaining summary, conclusory testimony from the claimant and the claimant's doctor. My treatment's reasonable, necessary, and related, and shifting that burden of proof onto the employer to raise a specific issue as to any particular bill. Your point is well taken. The board does not want to hear the minutiae about every single bill, that the particulars of which may not be in dispute. And that's why that's set up the way it is. It was done in this case in the sense that we provided the bills to the defense in advance of the hearing. There was no issue raised in advance. The bills also were not paid. There was also no argument made at any point up until today, as far as I know, about any defect in the billing records. So we're hearing that now. That wasn't raised in the briefing in the Superior or the Supreme Courts. So those are the problems. Thank you. I'm out of time.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. The court appreciates your argument. We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll adjourn.